The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
But first, good morning to Alistair Campbell, writer, communicator, consultant, strategist, mental health campaigner, and of course, host of the award-winning podcast, The Rest is Politics, with former Tory Minister Rory Stewart. Alistair, good morning.
Hi, Pat. How are you?
Very well. I was watching and listening to your podcast immediately following the Zelensky-Trump-Vance meeting in the Oval Office. And you, it's fair to say, you were gobsmacked.
I was. I mean, maybe we shouldn't be gobsmacked because, you know, we've seen Trump coming, and I think Trump term two is in many ways the same as Trump one, but I think there are some big differences. I think he's much more aggressive. I think he's much more confident. I think he's much more, even more narcissistic than he's ever been. And I've seen some pretty rough bust-ups between political leaders in private, but I've never seen anything like that in public. And I do think it was one of those moments that we'll be talking about and writing about and thinking about for a long, long, long time to come.
You actually said that you saw Putin lose his rag with Tony Blair.
I did, yeah. That was it was towards the end of the Iraq war period when Putin called us up and said he'd like to welcome Tony for a bilateral. And we thought, oh, that's quite interesting. Maybe he wants to, you know, make up. And it turned out to be an absolute haranguing. He didn't exactly call him Putin, Bush's poodle, but he got very, very close. And I remember coming out of the dinner and David Manning, who was Tony's main foreign policy advisor at the time, said, I've never seen anything like that. That is the end of all diplomacy when people behave like that. Now, the fact is, as a consequence of what happened between Vance and Trump and Zelensky the other day, Trump seems to, if you look at his speech last night, I can't pretend that I watched the whole thing. I mean, I can barely take a minute of the guy, let alone an hour and 40 minutes. But it's clear that he's welcomed this message from Zelensky that he wants to get back and sign this minerals deal and talk things over again. So that is a good sign. But what I find absolutely incredible about the whole thing, and this is what Roy Stewart and I talk about on the podcast this morning, is that Trump takes Putin at face value. Well, everybody knows the guy's a proven liar and breaks every agreement pretty much that he's ever made, and demands nothing of Putin whilst making endless demands of Zelensky. And I thought that, so the notion, I think why we're all finding this so difficult to handle is that the aggressor is being rewarded and the victim is being punished and friends are being treated as enemies and enemies are being treated as friends. That is a very bizarre way for an American leader to behave.
Now, just back to that diplomatic spat, the row, the face-off, which I was disappointed to see the way it was being characterised as a shouting match in the Oval Office. I mean, Zelensky was being cowed by Vance and Trump. I mean, they were bullying him. It wasn't an equal fight, if you like. Two big guys against the little guy in the corner. It was unseemly. And I want to just play a very short clip of Bill Clinton on, what really goes on at these kind of meetings. It's very short. Have a listen.
You should be brutally honest with people in private. And then if you want them to help you, try to avoid embarrassing them in public. Right. Now, sometimes they do things which make it impossible for you to keep quiet. But by and large, I found all the people I dealt with appreciated it if I told them the truth.
So tell the truth in private, be brutally honest, but observe the diplomatic niceties in public.
And that is, for example, I think, what Keir Starmer is doing in relation to Trump. I'm sure that Trump, when Keir met Trump last week, that he'd have had some, pretty straightforward, blunt things to say. But then in public, you're nice, as it were. And Rory Stewart and I, we were in Davos a few weeks ago and we did an interview with Kevin McCarthy, the former speaker in the US. And he made the point, he actually said about Trump, similar to what Bill Clinton just said, he said, the thing about Trump, he is very thin-skinned, he is very petulant, but you can be straightforward with him, but he will never forgive you if you attack him in public. Now, I think that what happened in the White House. I think Vance, who clearly is inhaling his own MAGA-based propaganda, is enjoying the attention, is trying to appeal to Trump as his kind of number one supporter. I think he deliberately provoked the thing, but I don't think he would have done that without Trump having a vague instinct that it would happen and encouraging it. And it was worse. You say that it was two big guys against the little guy, but I actually think that Zelensky came out as the bigger guy because he was cowed, he was bullied, he was intimidated, but he held his ground. Mm. And as a result of that, he got kicked out of the White House, and now he's had to send this letter to Trump saying, let's get back around the table, it was all regrettable, blah, blah, blah. But I noticed very little coverage last night when I saw his social media post. He did make clear that he saw any signing of a mineral deal as a step towards security guarantees. So he's still in the negotiating phase. The other thing, I was watching last night, the night before rather, a documentary about the Middle East that this lady, a British woman, Norma Percy, has made. And part three is about Trump talking about the beautiful deal he's making in the Middle East. And it's exactly the phrase he used last night about this one. Wouldn't it be beautiful? We're going to make a beautiful deal. But he moves on. He doesn't stick with things. And so I think the downside of what's happened in recent days is the utter unpredictability of Trump. But in a funny sort of way, that's the upside, because he'll move on to the next thing. Yeah. And, you know, we interviewed Michael Wolff recently, the author who's written four books about Trump and is no fan of Trump. And he said something very interesting. He said, the thing about you guys is that you spend all your time sitting around trying to rationalise and trying to analyse and understand why Trump behaves like he does. You're taking him too seriously. He's not a serious person. He's a reality TV show. And he's a never-ending reality TV show who just happens now to have a standing army and nuclear weapons.
And that's the problem. Carl Bildt the other day, I saw an interview with him saying, you know, that Trump is a deeply unserious person. And that is an issue when you're dealing with someone who's so mercurial and so superficial. Interesting, though, in terms of the tariffs on Canada, and Canada is responding in spades with the threat of even more reciprocity from Trump if they do what they're threatening to do, and they will. But this is a very short clip of Justin Trudeau. It's now probably going to be one of those things we'll talk about into the future as well. Very short, but have a listen.
Now, it's not in my habit to agree with the Wall Street Journal. But Donald, they point out that even though you're a very smart guy, this is a very dumb thing to do.
You don't get away with calling Trump dumb, except if you're leaving politics anyway.
Yeah, although, excuse me, Pat, sorry to keep plugging the podcast, if you listen to our interviews this week on Leading are with the two people who are vying to replace Justin Trudeau, Mark Carney and Chrystia Freeland, and they're both very, very tough in relation. They both even say that they supported those Canadian ice hockey players who basically threw down their gloves and just started knocking lumps out of the American team when they played them recently. They're both very, very tough. And I actually think this is and Chrystia Freeland was interesting because when she was trade minister before, when they did the deal with America and Mexico that Trump at the time said was the greatest deal ever done and now says it's a terrible deal and he can't believe that anybody would sign it. By the way, it was you. She was making clear that Trump, in her experience, just does not respect weakness. He only respects strength. So even though he'll be fulminating at Justin Trudeau, or girl, as Elon Musk calls him, that is the way. He has provoked in Canada a truly extraordinary response. Before the Trudeau said he was going to step down, and then the tariffs, the threat of tariffs, and taking over Canada as the 51st state, Polly Evra, who's the kind of mini Trump in Canada, he was 20 plus points ahead in the polls of an election that's going to be coming in the next few weeks or months. He's now down to single figures. And if Mark Carney wins the leadership at the weekend, which I think he's going to, I think there's a very, very good chance that we could be seeing one of the most remarkable political comebacks. And that will be down to the downside of Donald Trump. And similarly, in Germany, the German election recently, all that fuss about the AfD, all the focus on the AfD, and yes, they doubled their vote, but I actually think that Musk's intervention helped the AfD's opponents because I think it motivated other people to get out and stop this.
Alistair, this deal that is now going to be made today, it would appear that it'll be signed, and it looks like, according to reporting, that Keir Starmer and Emmanuel Macron will accompany Zelensky to Washington. I was watching a very interesting woman last night being interviewed on CNN. Her name is Grasselin Baskaran, and she is the director of the Critical Minerals Security Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. And she was saying, you know, these minerals, it takes maybe 10 years to open the mine effectively, and you don't really get your money back maybe for decades. And, you know, who's going to put money in there on that kind of basis if there is no security? So this deal, is it all about appearing to make a deal that in the end will be pretty meaningless?
Well, I think four things motivate Donald Trump. One is attention. He has to be the center of attention all the time. And right now, I mean, there won't be a radio program in most parts of the world that won't be talking about him today at some point. Most conversations. I saw a wonderful cartoon the other day of a father sitting at the dinner table with his wife and three kids. And the caption said, Can you three pick up your phone and start looking at them rather than talking about Donald Trump the whole time? So I think that he is definitely the center of attention. The second thing I think that motivates him is, which relates to that, is people knowing that he is the most powerful person in the world. I mean, it is quite extraordinary how pathetic it is, the extent to which he talks about how great he is. He talks about how powerful he is. He talks about how amazing he is the whole time.
Rather than speak softly and carry a big stick.
Exactly. Well, he does have the big stick, but he speaks very, very loudly, and he often leaves the big stick. The stick sort of waves so wildly in so many different directions that it never quite lands where it's meant to land. And then I think the third thing that motivates him is money. And I think what this is about is the combination of the power and the money bit. And don't forget, one of the reasons why I think we interviewed Fiona Hill recently, who was she's a British woman who ended up being a foreign policy advisor to Trump in the first term. And she explained his fascination with Putin on the basis that he's jealous of Putin because Putin runs the country almost like an extension of a personal business. He's bought this rumor that Putin is the richest person in the world. He wants to be the richest person in the world. And some, you know, lost in all of this is the levels of corruption that you have when you get rid of all of these inspection processes. And you know, there was one the other day where some guy who'd put in tons of money into Trump's, I think it was his Bitcoin or his something or other, and he was under investigation by the Securities Exchange, and this thing's suddenly been dropped. Stuff like that's happening all the time. So I think that the minerals thing is about saying, we've got a deal and we're getting the money back. And basically, the money, the lies that he talks about the money, Macron, to be fair to him, and Zelensky and Starmer all corrected him on this in their different ways, but he still continues to say that America has put more military assistance in than Europe, etc. He still continues to say that we're going to get all the money back when it's not true. So this is just a way of him setting up a different way of projecting himself, and then he'll move on. I mean, back to the point about the Middle East. I mean, here we are with the ceasefire looking like it's very, very fragile. When was the last time you heard Trump talk about Gaza? When the ceasefire happened, he took all the credit. He doesn't actually care, I don't think, about these issues, other than in the moment, today's episode of the Trump reality TV show.
Now, the question then of what will happen, one of the listeners preoccupied with what will happen at the end of his term. I mean, will we see a January the 6th type event to keep him in power?
Well, I certainly wouldn't rule it out. He makes jokes about it all the time, you know. I mean, I'm not supposed to stay, but maybe I could. People want me to, blah, blah, blah. He's already on that kick. And when you saw that, the bits that I've seen of that speech at Congress last night, the extent to which he has utterly captured the Republican Party is beyond belief. I would reckon a fairly sizable chunk of those Republicans absolutely despise him and despise what he's done to their party and despise what he stands for. But they're scared. They're scared of him. They're scared of Musk and the forces of hell that he can unleash through social media. You talk to these American politicians now. I mean, we get a bit of it this here, and I've had my fair share of it, but the kind of level of death threats and threats of violence and threats to go after your kids and all that sort of stuff. You're talking basically about, it sometimes feels like, it's run almost like a kind of mafia organization. And of course, when you feed into that, the levels of corruption that I mentioned earlier. So the question then is whether there is within the American system the guardrails to fight back. And what Trump meant yesterday when he said, "I've only just started," just think about how much he has changed in the last few. Now, it may not go anywhere, but he is definitely, and Vance, who I think is turning out to be a really malign force in so many ways. I mean, he's the guy who drove this whole thing about Europe when he went to the Munich Security Conference and made that ridiculous speech about, claiming that we don't have free speech, and he's still on that shtick. But what you've got is a much better organized, much more ideologically group of people surrounding Trump and driving Trump. And of course, Trump's so thin-skinned that he has to feel that it's all about himself. But I think these other forces are really just as powerful within the American system now. So what happens when he goes, if he goes? I don't think America is going to swing back. It's not going to be we're no longer in a kind of pendulum state. This is real damaging, long-term, lasting change that's being made.
The question of Trump and Putin and the suggestion that he is de facto, as one university professor put it to us yesterday, whether he was recruited by the KGB, whether they have the goods on him, compromat or whatever it might be, whether he's in hock for millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars to the Russians, he is de facto a Russian asset in the way he behaves.
As is Tulsi Gabbard, the head of intelligence. I saw an interview with her the other day. So she's the head of American intelligence. And she did an interview saying the problem with Zelensky is he's banned all elections. The Ukrainian constitution bans elections in wartime. They run this line that Putin runs and that Trump runs, that Zelensky's not popular. Zelensky has higher ratings than Donald Trump by some margin within his own country. So it's very hard to, and by the way, there's something very funny on Twitter today, or X, as Musk insists that it should be called. The Grok thing, their kind of AI tool that's on Twitter. If you ask Grok the probability that Trump is a Russian asset, it comes up at something like 75%. So even Musk's platform is saying there's something weird going on there. Now, what it is, I don't know. But the fact that we're even having that discussion, and the fact, if you think about what Nixon had to leave office for compared to some of this stuff, and the fact of Trump has now got the Republican Party, as they did yesterday, basically cheering the idea that Trump can make peace with Putin because Putin is a man of his word, when through most of our lifetime, Russia and the Soviet Union have been the enemy of the United States. Republican Party that's supposed to believe in free trade, and this guy is essentially ending the norms of free trade and possibly provoking a global trade war that shall have, profoundly bad effects right around the world. And a Republican Party that also has in the past cared about people outside America's shores. I mean, George W. Bush and his PEPFAR program on AIDS and HIV has saved hundreds of thousands of lives around the world. And at a stroke of a pen, Trump gets rid of the whole USAID. It's unbelievable that that party, and with all its record and all its history, is now being co-opted, not just by a man, but actually essentially by an ego.
And finally, Alistair, on two related points. One is Keir Starmer goes to the Oval Office and like a magician, he pulls out the invitation from his inside pocket to give to Trump. And he tells him, even before he gives it to him, this is big. This is huge. This is enormous. This is unprecedented. And then the invitation to have a state visit to Britain from King Charles himself, no less. Mm. And I'm wondering what poor Micheál Martin can offer when he has to brandish the bowl of shamrock, which I don't think Donald Trump will have any regard for at all.
Yeah, but don't be too harsh on yourself. I mean, you've got to remember about the United Kingdom. One, we are a much bigger country and we are a nuclear power and we're one of the five permanent members of the United Nations and in the Five Eyes intelligence community and all that. And we do have the soft power of the monarchy. But let's be absolutely frank. How many countries have the relationship with the United States that allows St. Patrick's Day to become the huge thing that it is in America? So you may not have the king, but you've got other stuff going on. So I wouldn't beat yourself up too much. And added to which, yes, Keir Starmer has made, he took that letter and the king has offered the state visit, but I'm sure King Kremlin watchers will have noted that he also saw Zelensky at the weekend and he saw Justin Trudeau. So let's see when this state visit happens. I think there'll be a lot of sleepless nights in the planning of that one.
Mm. Do you remember the last state visit where he almost knocked the late Queen over?
But that just shows you how utterly egotistical he is. And I think, isn't it right that when the Queen died, his tribute was basically, she was a great lady, she really liked me.
It says it all. Alistair, thank you very much for joining us. Alistair Campbell, writer, communicator, consultant, mental health campaigner, and so much more, and host of the award-winning podcast, The Rest is Politics with Rory Stewart.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.